Good afternoon, everyone. This is Pam Stack. Welcome to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. While it is 3 o'clock in Southwest Florida, it is 9 o'clock in France, and I am speaking to Peter May today. Peter May has written more books than I can count on fingers and toes and your fingers and toes, and he's been awarded so many honors for his writing that, again, my fingers and toes and your fingers and toes aren't going to be enough. So get ready to hear what this wonderful author has to say when we get started in just a second. Everyone, I'm so honored today to speak to Scottish author Peter May, who is not living in Scotland but lives in France by way of Spain and back and forth, I suppose. But his latest book, Coffin Road, is a masterpiece. I had the pleasure of reading it. You've heard me ask most authors, and most of them respond that, you know, what is, how do you choose the storyline? And they always say, what if? So here's a question for you. If you killed someone, you would remember, wouldn't you? That's the premise for Peter May's book. I want to welcome to Authors on the Air Peter May, all the way from France. Peter, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Pam. It's my pleasure to be with you.
And it's 9 o'clock in the evening in France right now.
It is, yes, indeed. Yeah, it's been very cold recently, but it's just turned a little bit milder, so I'm quite comfortable in my study at the moment.
How wonderful. Now, Peter has advised me that he doesn't have rugs on the study floor, and so if it sounds a little echoey, that's probably what it sounds like if you were to go stand in your kitchen where you have tile or anything else. So his connection is good. I want to give you the phone number to call in and ask questions, and just give me a few minutes, though. It's 347-633-9609. Peter, let's get right to it. I want to know, how do you not know if you killed someone?
If you've lost your memory, you might have a problem remembering whether you've done it or not. I guess this is the premise of Coffin Road. It opens with a man washed up on a beach on a remote island in the Outer Hebrides of Scotland, and he has no idea who he is, where he is, or why he's there. But there's this dark, dark sense of something awful that has happened that he doesn't, he has no recollection of. And so when a little way into the book, he discovers the body of a murdered man in a place where he has spent some considerable amount of time. He doesn't know whether it's him who committed the murder or not. And when he can't remember, you know, the question is he somebody who's capable of this kind of act?
How delicious. What a wonderful premise. Now, this is part of the Lewis trilogy, is it not?
No, it's kind of ancillary to the Lewis trilogy. The Lewis trilogy was a self-contained three-book tale involving the character of Finn MacLeod, who was a detective from Edinburgh returning to the island of his birth. Those were stories that spanned three books, which were so successful that I was under huge pressure to go back to that place, the Outer Hebrides of Scotland, which people seem to fall in love with when they read the book. And I'd had such a a positive reaction throughout the world, and people writing to me, events I did when I was traveling in France and Spain and Italy and the US and the UK, people wanting to go and visit that place. In fact, it's extraordinary because since I wrote those books, tourism has absolutely exploded in these Western islands.
Oh, how wonderful. Now, do you love being there yourself? Do you like being in the Hebrides Islands yourself? Yes, you do.
I do. Well, it's a strange thing because, you know, I only went to the Hebrides for the very first time, the Outer Hebrides, for the very first time in 1990. And that was because at that time I was working in television. And my wife and I, my wife is also a screenwriter, we've been commissioned to come up with an idea for a television drama serial set in the islands and performed in the Gaelic language, which is the ancient language of Scotland, which is really only spoken for the most part now in the Hebrides. So I went there to research this and to come up with an idea for the television series, which I then went on to produce, and we made 99 episodes of it. It turned out to be a huge success. Effectively, it was kind of like foreign language drama because it was made in a language that only 2% of the population spoke. So it was subtitled, and it was transmitted at prime time on national television, 7:30 in the evening. And it got a 33% audience share and got into the top 10 in the program. So it turned out to be a huge success. But, you know, I spent 6 years on the island as producer of this show, filming it in all kinds of weathers and conditions. And you have to understand that the Hebrides is a kind of archipelago off the extreme northwest of Scotland, which is absolutely battered by the storms, the winds that race in off the Atlantic. And so it was not the easiest place in the world to film. And, you know, after 6 years of it, I quit television, I quit the island, and I said to myself, I'm never coming back here. But lo and behold, 10 years later, there I was back again, writing a book called The Black House, which turned out to be my big breakthrough book, and it was the first of the trilogy.
It's amazing to me all the different things you've done. Did you start as a journalist, Peter, when your writing career began?
Yes, I did. You know, it's a hard thing. Well, it was at that time when I was leaving school. I knew I wanted to be a writer. Basically what I wanted to do is write books. But there's no clear career path to become a novelist. Not at all. No, and in those days there was no. There were no courses at university in creative writing.
Right.
There was no educational route to becoming a novelist either. And so I didn't really know what to do. I took a couple of jobs, kind of treading water, till I figured out how it was that I could make a living as a writer. And then I came across this an application form, in fact, for a course in journalism, a one-year full-time course in journalism, which was being held in a college in Edinburgh, and I applied for that. There were, I think, more than 250 applicants for 12 places, and I was very fortunate to get one of those places. And that kicked off my career then as a journalist, and I spent the next 8 years working in newspapers. I was very fortunate at the age of 21 to win the Scottish Young Journalist of the Year Award, and that kind of propelled me out of local newspapers into, you know, the national newspapers. And it wasn't what I wanted to do. It wasn't the writing that I wanted to do, but I learned a lot as a journalist about writing, and I guess it also gave me an extraordinary insight into the workings of the world that most people probably wouldn't get to see. I mean, I was in covering stories in the most awful housing schemes where gangs of youths were stealing dogs and tying them to the railway lines.
Sure.
Terrible things like that. And at the other end of the spectrum, meeting prime ministers. You could not ask for a better background and grounding for a later career of writing novels, because it was a wonderful experience.
You said that it wasn't the writing that you wanted to do. You did it, but you didn't want to be a writer, that type of a writer. Did you want to write in a different vein? Is that what it was? Did you have a call to write, but not necessarily journalism? Or did you have a call to write, you just didn't know how to get there?
I had a call to write, and I didn't know how to get there. I wanted to write fiction. That was the primary thing. I started very young. I wrote my first book when I was 4 years old. Believe it or not.
You were destined to be a writer. Jeez.
Well, I always say, it's in the DNA. It's not,
yes.
I don't think you choose to be a writer. You're in some way driven to be a writer.
I think.
My father was an English teacher, and my parents taught me to read and write at a very basic level before I ever went to school. And the first thing, given those very basic tools, that I did was write a story, which was called The Little Elf, and it was about 6 pages long, and there were maybe about a dozen words per page scrawled in blue crayon,
but it was
a story. It had a beginning and a middle and an end, and the reason I know about that, I don't actually remember writing it, but my parents kept it, after they had passed away, I found it in a box in an attic in their house. And I had made a cover for it. My mother had obviously shown me how to sew the pages together, just like a real book. On the front of it, and I must have seen this on another book somewhere, I had written, printed in Scotland and made in England. So it was clearly something in my DNA, I wanted
Absolutely.
To write, and I wanted to write fiction. And while journalism wasn't writing fiction, it was part of that path that I followed that led me to, do the things that I've been doing most recently.
So you knew you wanted to write fiction, yet you also went into film, to screenwriting. That still wasn't writing books, was it?
Well,
or did that was that also another prep for you, or did you write in between?
It was an odd transition. It wasn't planned in any way. What happened was that I was working as a journalist, but I had been writing away. I'd been writing books that I had not been able to get published, and then. I did something which I should have done years before, because everybody had said to me, the advice that aspiring young writers are always given and was given to me was write about what you know. And of course, I always thought I knew better, and I wrote about things I didn't know anything about. And that's why I never got published. And then I made a breakthrough. I wrote a book called The Reporter. I was working as a journalist, and I wrote a story, a thriller about a journalist, and it was the first book I got published. So clearly, write about what you know works. And having got this book published, I thought this would make a great setup for a TV show. Now, this character, this situation, working out of a newspaper office in Glasgow, in Scotland. And so I developed, along with a colleague that I was working with in newspapers at the time, I developed a format and characters for a TV series based upon this book that I'd written. And we submitted it to the BBC. And much to our astonishment, we were summoned to a meeting with the head of drama at BBC Scotland. He'd just arrived from London. fresh from kind of award-winning drama called Elizabeth R, which he produced. And her proposal was the first thing that had landed on his desk, and he called us into a meeting with him. And he opened a couple of cans of beer, and we sat and chatted for a while, and he said, let's do it. And so we made a TV show, and that was my transition from newspapers into television, which was nothing that it wasn't anything I'd ever foreseen or had ambitions to do. And yet there I was. I'd become a screenwriter. I then spent the next 17 years working in television as a script editor, story editor, on various long-running drama serials, and then creating the Gaelic drama serial that I mentioned earlier, which I also produced, before finally, in I think it was 1996, I decided that, you know, it was now or never. If I wanted to make a living as a writer of fiction, as a novelist, I had to quit television, because television was a good and easy living in a sense. I had to kind of abandon all that, the comfortable income, and go back out there into the cold and start writing books and try and get them published and try and make a living at it. And that's what I did.
How amazing that it took you through so much to, you had written this one book that you turned into, you know, a television series and everything else. And it took you so long to do what you wanted to do ultimately. Are you safely settled into fiction writing right now? Cause I don't think you are. You write nonfiction also, don't you?
I've only written one nonfiction book, and funnily enough, that was it's a book called Hebrides, and it's really a photo book. I wrote the text for it, but it's a book which provides photographic representation of all the locations that appear in the Lewis trilogy. Those books had been so successful that. My publisher said, you know, why don't we do a photo book? And so a friend of mine who had been, in fact, my designer on the TV show that we made up in the islands, and who ended up living there, he was a fantastic photographer. So we asked him to do the photographs, and I wrote the text, and it became a huge bestseller as well.
How fun for you. How fun that you kept finding these successes on your way to becoming a novelist. I just wonder what's next for you, or do you think there's no next, that you're where you are right now and you're very comfortable? Because I know that your books have won critical awards and accolades, rave reviews from everyone. I was looking at the list. There are just too many places for me to name off, but if you asked me to, I would tell you that the New York Times, the Seattle Times, USA Today, Library Journal, Booklist, Publishers Weekly, there are so many different places that you are mentioned. So everybody loves your work. I don't think you've written anything that wasn't a critical success. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. The thing is, you know, you reach a point in your life and your career when you can look back and you can say, yes, this has been successful and I've achieved that, or I've achieved this. But in a way, it kind of all looks easy, but it wasn't.
Sure.
It was tough going. You know, when I quit TV in 96, I didn't, you know, I'd saved up some money as a kind of cushion, because I knew how hard it was to make a living writing books. And the first book I wrote was something that had been brewing in my mind for some time. It was set in China, which was a country I'd gone to for the first time in the early 1980s and had always wanted to write about. And it was on a subject which was GMOs, genetic food modification, which had really interested me. And the two came together and I wrote this book. I wasn't sure quite how to tell the story, but I eventually decided that it would be an investigation into a murder. And through that investigation, I could unpack and tell the story I wanted to tell. And so it became a thriller. This was the first book I'd written since quitting television. I had no contract for it. So it was then submitted to publishers by my agent, and I was summoned to the office of one publisher in London, who said, "We like this book, we'd like to publish it, but we'd like to offer you a two-book deal." Of course, I was delighted because, well, I'm trying to make a living and somebody's offering me a two-book deal. And she said, "But the only thing is, we would like you to write about the same setting and the same characters." So it became China 2, if you like. The problem was, of course, at the end of that first book, I had written the characters into an impossible situation. So I had to find a way of writing them out of that. And write this second book. And two books turned into eventually six books.
Wow.
But they weren't immediately hugely successful. We had moderate sales. I was surviving just financially, along with foreign sales of selling in various countries around the world, but not for huge amounts of money. And then after the sixth book, my British publisher pulled the plug on the series, said, "No, we don't want it anymore." I had set up research trip to Tibet. I just got permission to get into the country and do all the research that I needed there for that book. So I was very upset when the publisher said, "No, we don't want it." And I had to look around for something else to write. And I wanted to do something very different, because at that point I'd moved from Scotland to France. I was living in France, and I'm looking back at my home country, Scotland, with a sense of perspective and distance, time and distance, and thought maybe I should write about Scotland. And I decided to write about the island where I had spent 6 years of my life filming this TV series, the Isle of Lewis in the Outer Hebrides. And I went back, having quit the island in 1996, saying I will never be back. 10 years later, there I was, researching this book. And the thing was, I got hugely emotionally involved in this story in the way that I'd never got involved in something like that before. And a huge amount of me went into it. A lot of stuff from my own life went into it. I was convinced when I'd finished writing it that it was the best thing I'd written. And my agent sent it around all the publishing houses in London. And one by one, they all came back and turned it down. And it was turned down by every publisher in the UK. And I couldn't understand it at the time. I mean, I'd been convinced it was the best thing I'd ever written, but there it was. Nobody wanted it, and I put it away in a drawer, and I started writing something else. I started writing a series set in France called The Enzo Files, about an expat Scot, forensic expert, living in France and solving cold cases there. And The thing was, I found a publisher in America for that, and that series started going out in the States. And about 3 years later, I was at a book fair in France, and I involved in a chat with my French publisher. My French publisher at that point were publishing the China books, which were being published to great success in France. And I said to her, I don't know why it just came into my head that I had this manuscript for a book sitting in a drawer that I thought was the best thing I'd ever written, but nobody wanted to publish. And she said, "Well, I'd like to read it." So I sent her a copy of it. And 6 weeks later, she called me back and she said, "I love it. I want to buy world rights." And you know,
Wow.
it's you know almost unheard of, or completely unheard of, in fact, for a French publisher to buy world rights in a book written in English.
Well, probably for most publishers, it's almost unheard of nowadays, wouldn't you think?
Yes. but it was extraordinary. So, I mean, I was delighted, obviously. The book was translated into French, and it was published first in France in French. And it was called The Black House, and it turned out to be the first of the Lewis trilogy. And it was a huge success in France. I mean, it was a huge bestseller. It started winning all these literary awards. The publisher took it to the big book fair at Frankfurt, and publishers all over Europe and around the world started buying it up. And last of all came the British, who had all turned it down in the first place. And the ultimate irony is that, you know, the books were then published in the UK, and where they have sold more than 2 million copies.
Good grief, Peter.
I mean, this is for a book that was turned down by everybody.
By everyone. What a wonderful story. That is a story of perseverance. And, you know, I often hear, because I'm not a writer, but I often hear from writers who say to me, or published authors, I should say, that it takes a lot of talent, it takes a lot of patience and perseverance, and just a little touch of luck will turn things around, right?
Pam, it takes a huge amount of luck. Honestly, I'm convinced that there are a lot of very good writers out there who are not being published, and the only reason
I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, sure. I speak to a lot of independently published authors because they can't get book deals. Although nowadays, I don't know, Peter, you know, if getting a book deal is really what it used to be, even 10 years ago. I think times have changed so much in publishing. I want to ask you a couple questions. What a fascinating story, because I know you've written more since then. But looking back on when you first started your writing your novels, your fiction, what have you learned about yourself as a writer from when you first began to where you are today?
I think the thing that you learn more than anything else is that you must stop trying to write for a marketplace. That you shouldn't try to write a bestseller. That you should not try to fulfill the publisher's desire to write the next Girl on the Train, the next, you know, big success.
Right.
What you have to do is be true to yourself, first and foremost, that you have to dig deep into your own psyche, your own past, your own personal experience, your loves and hates and regrets, and write about that. Because I think the most important thing is that you are writing from inside in a way that readers can identify with, because we're all part of the human race. We're all part of a common humanity.
Absolutely.
And I think the most important function that the writer can perform is to let other people know, people who are reading his or her writing, that they are not alone in experiencing these things and feeling these emotions and having these thoughts, that these are all part of a universal experience, and that we are not alone, you know. So it's about being true to yourself.
Absolutely. We have a caller, so let's see what the caller has to say, and then we'll continue on. Hi, caller. You're live with Peter May. Who says?
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
It's Maura Lynch. How are you?
Hi, Maura Lynch. How are you?
Maura is a writer also, by the way, Peter, so just to let you know.
Okay.
Go ahead, Maura. You have questions and have a chance to talk to Peter. Go right ahead.
Well, I'm very excited. I just wanted to know if winning the Barry Award for the first Lewis novel, Black House, at BoucherCon in Albany, had any effect on breaking into the American market.
I think it did, yes, because it provided a recognition in the American market that I had not had prior to that. Even though I'd had good reviews, I think it takes that kind of high-profile award and recognition for particularly for, and let's face it, I'm a foreign writer, to break into the American market. I think the American market is notoriously difficult for even for British writers who apparently write in the same language, but it's a very difficult market for us to break into.
Mm-hmm.
I think that actually works the other way as well. I think a lot of American writers find it very hard to break into the British market. There are a lucky few on both sides of the Atlantic who do make that breakthrough. But yes, I think it was hugely important in helping to increase awareness of my writing in North America.
Did you have to do any book tours?
Yeah, I've done about 6 book tours in the States. I think I did my first book tour in the States in 2005, and this was at a point where I was finding it very difficult to break through. I was being published by a small publisher, to get any kind of a profile, you had to actually get out there on the road and go out and talk to readers and go to bookstores and
mm-hmm.
try and raise your profile. And so I financed, I think, 4 tours of the U.S. myself between about 2005 and 2010 to try and make that breakthrough. And while they were partially successful and I did develop a fairly faithful readership, it was a small readership and it was obviously going to take something more to break out into a larger marketplace.
Well, you certainly have won the allocades and the awards to make for good marketing, just from the commerce side of things. Might I ask you one more question?
Sure.
Who are some of your favorite American crime fiction writers?
I would say that probably my favorite is William Kent Kruger.
Kent Kruger's amazing.
I love Kent's stuff. I mean, his series. I've forgotten the name of the protagonist. The sheriff. Half Irish, half American Indian. His name escapes me for the moment. But I love that series. But
the Cork O'Connor.
Cork O'Connor. That's it. Exactly. But the one that really for me was his huge breakthrough book was Ordinary Grace. I just think is a seminal piece of writing and is destined probably to become one of the kind of modern American classics.
Definitely.
Just think it's a terrific piece of writing and I love his work very much indeed.
I think the fact that it's a historical thriller, crime thriller, has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, it was very evocative, that early 1960s setting in rural Minnesota. Beautifully done.
His prose is just exceptional, though. There's no way you can't. If you fall in love with, if you love beautiful writing and all, it's easy to fall in love with Kent's books for sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm still here. I was just looking at all the. He won every award across the board for that one too.
Yeah,
that is not surprising.
I mean, he won the Edgar, he won the Left Coast Squid, he won the Barry, he won the Anthony and the McCavity for Ordinary Grace.
He's a hard one to beat for anything because his writing is so exceptional. Mara, stay with us while I continue to talk to Peter, please. Peter, you've had incredible success with the books that we've talked about so far. And interestingly enough, having that one book that was rejected, taken over by the French publisher, really threw you into the stratosphere of book sales, and that was wonderful. So what I want to know is, when you sat down to write the book after that, were you thinking to yourself, oh no, how am I going to do better than what I've already written? Or did you think, I've got this, I already know what I'm going to do?
I think it was the former. You know, when you have a big success, it puts a huge amount of pressure on you, because you know you have to follow up with something that is good, and you hope is just as good, if not better. But you've created in a way a kind of a yardstick by which people are always going to judge you. And so yes, writing the first book after the trilogy was quite stressful. I had a long time thinking about what it was I was going to do, and in the end I followed that, my own advice, if you like, what I was talking about earlier about being true to yourself, decided to write about something that I felt passionately about, and that was an historical event that happened across 100 years between the 18th and 19th centuries in Scotland. It was called the Highland Clearances, and it was a period in history when a new breed of landowner took over Highland estates in Scotland and forcibly ejected people from the land, people who had been living there all their lives, whose ancestors had been living there for generations. They were forcibly ejected from the land to make way for sheep, which were more financially rewarding. And these people were, many, many hundreds of thousands of them were forced onto boats to sail to Australia, North America, with basically no more than the clothes they were standing up in, and you know, no money in their pockets, no idea where they were going or what was going to happen to them. And it, you know, the thing is, I mean, that was something I wanted to write about, but you know, I'm a contemporary crime writer, so how do I do that? And I found a way of creating a contemporary crime story, which is set in present-day Quebec, a murder investigation, which has links back into mid-19th century Scotland and to do with that migration of peoples from you know, the Scottish Islands to North America. And it was a huge risk for me. It was very different from anything I'd done before. But it turned out to be very successful. In fact, it won me the Scottish Crime Book of the Year award.
And which book was that, Peter? What is the title of the book, please?
It's called Entry Island.
Right.
And,
published that in January of 2014, right?
In America, yes. I think so, yes. Yeah, it was a leap in the dark, in a way, and the fact that it was successful gave me confidence to go on and do other things which were, you know, standalones, rather than getting myself tied down in writing more series, because the book I wrote after that was called Runaway. And that was totally different from anything I'd ever written. It was very largely semi-autobiographical, about a group of teenagers running away from Glasgow to London in the 1960s. But it was a kind of murder mystery again, and it spanned about a 50-year period. and was great fun to write, and was also very successful. There's a lot of uncertainty and fear even about trying to follow up on books which have been successful. But I think always I return to this thing of be true to yourself, write about what you know and what you believe
sure.
in. And yeah.
Do you know ahead of time when you know it's time for you to sit down and write, do you know what you're going to write about? Has a thought gathered in your mind, or have you had, you know, are you thinking about things and you're finally settling on a subject that you want to talk about? Are you a note taker or something? How does it work for you? What is your process like there?
I'm very organized. Some people might think I'm far too organized. But I guess the stuff that I bring with me from my days as a journalist and also as a television writer, research. I learned how to research any subject fearlessly and fast as a journalist.
You like research? Do you like researching things?
Yeah, I love the process of research. In fact, I enjoy it almost more than the writing. And that's definitely something that I brought with me from journalism. And the other thing I brought from journalism is writing fast. I write very, very fast. But that's also a skill, if you like, that I honed during my years of writing television, writing long-running serial drama where you had to produce in a very short space of time. And so when I come to writing my books, I have a germ of an idea. I spend about 3 months, 4 months perhaps, developing that idea and researching it. The two things go hand in hand, because very often research will feed into the creative process and give you ideas. And I work particularly on the characters, on character development and character relationship. When I've reached a certain point in that process, I sit down and I write a very detailed synopsis. And that's a kind of narrative A to Z. I start at the beginning and I finish at the end. And you know, when I sit down to do that, I don't really generally know where it's going exactly or how exactly it's going to end. But I probably work about 12, 14 hours a day on this for about 6-7 days.
Wow.
And that is my kind of white heat of creativity, if you like. That's where the story is forged. And when I've got that, I know I have my book. All I have to do then is write it. Yeah.
Interesting. Have you thought about collaborating with your wife?
No. We have collaborated on TV shows. We created a storyline together. We once wrote an episode of a sitcom together. What I use my wife for in that writing sense is the first look. She gets the first look at everything. I discuss the idea with her, and she always has input, which is valuable. And then when I do my detailed synopsis, she is the first to read it, and she'll throw things back at me that I didn't see or didn't think about. And it's a huge benefit, I think, and one that most writers probably don't have, is to have
don't
a spouse
have, right.
who is also a writer and whose views and ideas you totally respect. So it's fantastic for me to have Janice, her name is, as my first and primary critic.
How lovely. Mara, do you have any questions you want to ask Peter? because you've been so quiet.
I was listening so intently that
it's amazing, isn't it?
I'm
just so thrilled that you were able to be with me today, Peter. I have 2 hours worth of questions that I want to ask you. But first of all, will you please tell listeners where we can find you on the web? Because probably we're not going to be in the Hebrides or in France or Spain and not going to be able to find you in person, although it would be lovely if you came to America. Where should readers find you?
You've got a great website. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Your website is fantastic.
The website's great. My wife does my websites for me.
It's really one of the best author websites I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of them.
Oh, well, that's great. I will be sure to tell her that. she'll be delighted. It's a website that has evolved over many years, and so it contains a huge amount of information if you go trawling through it.
It does.
The address of that website is petermay.co.uk. But probably the best place to kind of make contact with me and find out latest news is on my Facebook author page.
How you and I think started talking, right?
I think
we
it
began
was
our
it,
chat
indeed.
On Facebook. It was wonderful. Mara, I want to thank you for being with me today. Thank you so much for phoning in.
Come
back and be a guest host sometime, okay? Thanks.
Okay.
I'll talk soon.
Okay,
you will then,
care.
Okay?
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye, Mara.
So, Peter, what's next on the agenda for you? Coffin Road is out as of October, and I would imagine that if it takes you 3 months to think about and research and synopsize, then perhaps you've got something on your list already?
Well, the next one's already written. It followed on. I wrote it last year immediately after I'd written Coffin Road, because it's actually the sixth and the final book in a series, the series about Enzo McLeod, the Enzo Files. People have been waiting for that book for nearly 5 years now, and I knew I just had to write it and finish the series and answer all those unanswered questions. So it comes out in the UK in January, and I think it comes out
that's
in the States.
That's Cast Iron, right?
Cast Iron, I think it's called. Yes.
Right.
And I think that comes out in the States next fall. And right now I'm currently working up an idea for a new standalone, which is also going to be set in the Outer Hebrides, I'm going to start writing that probably in April.
How wonderful. I cannot thank you enough for taking your evening and spending it with me on the radio. It has been such an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show, Peter. Will you come back again someday and chat with me
again? It would be my pleasure, Pam. I've enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to make sure that I get Mara on to come on, and she'll be my guest. I'll make her prepare questions ahead of time. I know she was very excited about speaking to you. I wish you and your wife a lovely holiday season and a happy new year, and I hope next year I have an opportunity to speak to you again. Thank you so very much for being with me, and have a good evening.
Thank you very much, Pam. You too.
Thank you. Goodbye, Peter.
Bye.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of our show, but I will be back tonight with award-winning author Matt Coyle, who's a great guy. His third book with Rick Cahill, his main character, launches tomorrow. So join me tonight at 9 o'clock. Thanks for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad, and thank you, Mara. Bye.